Hiring used to be hard. There were multiple job sites, stacks of resumes, a confusing review process. But today, hiring can be easy, and you only have to go to one place to get it done, ZipRecruiter.com/lockedon. ZipRecruiter sends your job to over 100 of the world's leading job boards. But they don't just stop there. With their powerful matching technology, ZipRecruiter scans thousands of resumes to find people with the right experience and invite them to apply to your job. As applications come in, ZipRecruiter analyzes each one and spotlights the top candidates so you never miss a great match. ZipRecruiter is so effective that 80% of employers who post in ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site within the first day. And right now, my listeners can try ZipRecruiter for free at this exclusive web address, ZipRecruiter.com/lockedon. That's ZipRecruiter.com/lockedon. That's LOCKEDON. That's ZipRecruiter.com/lockedon. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
You are Locked On Cavaliers, your daily podcast on the Cleveland Cavaliers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Joining me now, Jordan Zerm, UpRocks, host of the Great Rebuild Podcast. Jordan, how's it going, buddy?
Chris, it's going very well. I am having some weird, it's a weird experience watching the playoffs without either LeBron or the Cavs. So it's been a weird little one year, hopefully 1 or 2 year hiatus without the Cavs. That's probably wishful thinking, but it's good though. I feel like I've watched more just like national basketball than I usually do because the Cavs are done. So that's been cool, but it's been weird.
I would say I've kind of enjoyed some of it because the different styles we're seeing, like we're seeing just teams play differently. I think the East has been kind of fun to watch how that sort of unfolding. My sleep schedule is also really good because I just feel like I'm more rested at this time of year, where otherwise I'd be like, like I need a week off or like just some sort of like exhaustion. But yeah, it's different. It's I'm not quite enjoying like the Rockets, like Warriors kind of stuff, and like that kind of playoffy stuff where it's like we don't really get to talk about the games. It just feels like we're talking about refs or like injuries and stuff. Like I don't miss that, but I miss, you know, getting to cover games is really fun, especially when like people come into Cleveland and the arena is like crazy and that stuff's really fun, and isn't irreplaceable. It's like Kevin Love, like, being hanging out, who we're going to talk about today, like, he's hanging out in Thailand right now, and I'm sure he's, like, glad for that vacation, but, like, he's also, like, playing basketball at this time of year has been something that we have kind of gotten used to.
Yeah, it's become, like, a routine. You're right, though. Those four finals runs were exhausting as just, like, a person who has, you know, watches a game, has to plan around the games. A game started at 8, and then sometimes those finals game would tip off at 9. So, yeah, it's although I guess I stayed up and watched the entire Warriors-Rockets game last night, so maybe I'm still staying up as late as I would be, but the emotional investment is not there, and therefore I feel like mentally it's not quite as exhausting.
Yeah, I think that's about right. So we're going to talk about Kevin Love, but Jordan's first start with the coaching search. So we don't know, I would say, a ton about it right now. It seems like they've zeroed in on a certain type of candidate. Alex Jensen, Jamal Mosley, JB Bickerstaff are some of the names that we know are going to interview. There are guys like David Vanderpool, Jordy Fernandez, Nate Tibbetts that seem to be linked to the job as well. Notably, the Cavs made a point to shoot down the Rick Pitino rumor that got put out there, which was, I think, a very good sign for this. But just from the outside, in terms of what we seem to know about who they're targeting and the way they're doing it, what do you make of how the Cavs have approached this so far?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's gone, you know, I think the names that have kind of come out are the names that a lot of us sort of expected. And I do think that the archetype for the kind of coach they're looking for, a younger guy, who's done his time as an assistant, has an affinity for analytics and for that side of the basketball. You know, I think the most interesting thing, Chris, is that like the Cavs have one of the most robust sort of analytics driven front offices in the NBA. And, you know, when David Griffin was there, he sort of built that that roster of front office people that really, you know, we all know how much David Griffin is into analytics and how much he values that side of it. And he sort of built a staff that, you know, was also into it. And a lot of that staff is still in Cleveland. So, you know, although David Griffin was, you know, not retained and decided to leave, a lot of the people he worked with are still there. And it's so interesting that the coaches that essentially, you know, from David Blatt to Ty Lue to Larry Drew are just guys that didn't really, you know, adhere to the sort of analytics look at, be it like, you know, lineups that were playing together or who's starting the game or what two players sort of work well together on the court. Like, especially Ty Lue, I think he just sort of was the opposite of that. Not to say he didn't do any, you know, didn't pay, give any credence to analytics and didn't, you know, have meetings with those guys and go over numbers and stuff like that. But he just, you know, he very much, I feel like, was a, I'm going to go with my gut type of guy. And it was, that was really interesting because there was always a little bit of that divide. And so I think it's a good sign that some of the guys are looking at and some of the people that, you know, or the descriptions of the guys are looking at is going to be somebody that's going to, you know, let that play a bigger role in who they are as a coach and sort of the Cavs as a team moving forward. And I think that's exciting. I guess the only name that I guess is sort of like an eyebrow raiser outside of Rick Pitino, which fortunately was shot down, and that feels like a Dan Gilbert creation at its best.
Oh yeah,
but
I like considering who reported that. I did not like put a ton of credence to it.
Yeah.
But I was also like, this like checks out as a thing that will like happen. Like it feels like a lot longer than that, but like we're not a year removed yet from Chauncey Billups. Like, like,
yes, like, that back and forth that lasted like 2 weeks.
Yeah. So like, that's kind of where we're at in all this.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I guess the only other name, like JB Bickerstaff doesn't do a lot for me. I know he was put into sort of a tough situation in Memphis and, you know, had them playing well for stretches, this season, even after, you know, they traded Marc Gasol and there was all the rumors that they were going to trade Mike Conley. And like, that's a difficult situation to sort of be a part of, but he's just, I don't know, you know, he's been an interim coach before. He was an interim coach with the Rockets. Then he went to Memphis and he's just a name that doesn't really excite me that much. Now, he is young. I guess he's 40 years old, but he's been around for a really long time, and it just sort of feels like, I don't know, I sort of shrug my shoulders at that. And maybe it's because of his dad, too, but I don't know. But outside of that, I feel like the guys that they're looking at, the guys you mentioned, guys from Portland and guys from, you know, like Utah, like Alex Jensen really intrigues me just because I love sort of how Utah has always gotten the most out of, you know, their undermanned rosters. And so it's, you know, I think where they're looking and the type of guy they're looking for is good. And I feel like they've done, you know, a lot of their interviews are going to have to wait until some of these teams get knocked out of the playoffs. But I feel like the pool of candidates is as good as you could hope for.
So I agree. And I think the other side of this, in addition to like the analytics and that is like that, it seems based on the names we've seen, it does seem like the Cavs are actually trying to hire someone who's going to help them establish a culture. That's something like Kobe Altman has like really pushed ever since he took over. It's been a talking point. If you talk to David Griffin, even, he will tell you like it is much about the people and how you can empower people as much as it is about like using the right numbers. Like he is like, that is like an ethos that comes from him. Altman obviously worked under him. Guys like Mike Gainsey came up under the Griffin regime. Like those are things that matter. The guys and the teams that they're looking at. So if you look at Vanderpool and Tibbetts, they're coming from Portland, where Dame, I mean, a lot of that comes from Dame, it seems like, but like that's a really well-renowned culture. In Denver, you have it seems like that's a tight-knit culture. It seems like they've really developed something positive there. Juwan Howard is not someone I think is like actually going to like be a real candidate, it seems like, but he comes from, regardless of what you want to say about the Heat cap sheet, like they've developed like a culture down there and developed a system that seems to at least give them their best chance of being good. Now, I don't know how like this applies to Jamal Mosley. I don't know how this applies to JB Bickerstaff. Although from my understanding, players liked Bickerstaff in Memphis. That counts for something. But like guys like Alex Jensen, guys like David Vanderpool, guys like Nate Tibbetts, guys like Jordy Fernandez, are guys that I think like fit the kind of mold that I would be trying to hire if I was the Cavs. I think, you know, if you're looking at like what they could do differently and actually to rebuild in a non-LeBron way and not getting like lucky to get Kyrie, it's building a culture. It's building on attributes that you know you can cultivate and develop, and not isn't just relying on talent and hitting draft picks. Like, I think that's part of the reason why they like Colin Sexton as much as like Shea. I think Shea's probably a better. Shea Alexander is like probably a better prospect. I think he's certainly got some traits and stuff. I think there's something about Sexton that the dude just works and he grinds, and like Jetty does that, and I think, you know, Nance does that, and I think Love is certainly kind of setting it, helps set a tone there. Tristan was doing that. I think like that's the kind of guy they're going to hire, and I want to see if they need to follow through with it. And I think once they do that, I think you can feel like the Cavs are at least doing something different. And from where we are right now, it seems like they are at least trying to do something different. We could get like a Tom Izzo like is being offered $10 million a year report in a day, and that could like derail this whole process. But like right now, they're on the right track.
Yeah, I think they're too. And this is something where you hope, you know, Dan Gilbert stays as much out of the way as he can and sort of lets Kobe, you know, run the search, because it does feel like Kobe really does has had a list and has had guys that he, you know, wants to target. I feel like reports of who they were looking at came out pretty quickly after the season ended. And I think you make a good point about Colin Sexton, because if you look back at where the Cavs were the first time LeBron left, culture was not a strong point those first few years. And even, you know, when Kyrie got there, there was the infamous incident of him leaving the court on Fan Appreciation Night when he was supposed to stay and sign autographs. You sort of have his beef with Dion Waiters. Like, there was just not, they didn't have veterans like Kevin Love and Tristan Thompson to sort of, you know, not only come from a championship culture, but anybody that was there that just could sort of stabilize things. And I think Godwell Deng
in there, and he like didn't help.
And
like,
he was horrified.
He was just like, what is going on here? Like, and
it was so bad.
Yeah, like that speaks to it. And it's like, this is like there's a lot of litigation, I think, among Cavs Twitter, like going on about Dame right now. For me personally, and since I've gotten a little bit older, I think my bias has rescinded a little bit. And I think as I've started to talk to players more, talk to people in the organization and like in other teams, I value like what Dame provides. Like, if like him and Kyrie are equal, let's just say like you consider them equal players, what Dame seems to do as a leader and as a culture setter versus like what Kyrie does, I want Dame 10 out of 10 times. And I think that kind of stuff, especially in a city like Cleveland, where like you're going to have to build organically most of the time, pretty much 99% of the time, I think for me, like, I prefer that Dame type of guy, and it seems like that Colin type of guy, maybe not to that degree, but like values that kind of stuff more than just like, let's get the most talented guy and like hope he doesn't like piss everybody off.
Yeah, no, for sure. And I think, you know, Colin is still so young, and he was very quiet for a lot of the season. And I think he started to, as we've talked about before, kind of come out of his shell a little bit towards the end of the season. It's still going to take time for him to ever, you know, he's got to, you know, improve and become, you know, the player that I think the Cavs hope he can be. But then two, to kind of take any sort of leadership role on that team. But that's why it's going to be fascinating when you talk about, you know, how much they're sort of focused on culture. Not only with their coach, but like if they don't get the number one pick and Zion is gone, and say they landed, you know, two or three, and you're looking at RJ Barrett compared to Ja Morant, or even if you're looking at like DeAndre Hunter or Jarrett Culver or whoever, like it's going to be interesting to see if their sort of quote unquote culture plays into who they pick too. Because I also like, I haven't been around RJ Barrett. Obviously, I haven't, you know, spent any time at Duke watching him in person or anything, but he doesn't exactly come off like a guy that's going to sort of have the Dame quality. Whereas, you know, I look at a Ja Morant and even a Jarrett Culver to an extent, and it feels like just leadership wise and being able to kind of be that heady guy that's going to push forward a culture, those guys have a little more of that just from stuff I've observed from watching this past season. So it's all going to be really fascinating to see where they go.
I can't wait for the draft leaks, and I can't wait for draft lottery night. We're getting closer and closer.
It's less than 2 weeks away.
I'm very excited. It will be hilarious if like they get number one, because I don't think Twitter will like take it well.
It's gonna, oh, people are gonna be so mad.
Yeah, I mean, the maddest I've ever been on Twitter was like the year the Cavs got the maddest I've seen people was when they got the Wiggins number one pick, and people just like were like livid about it, and it was just very funny. I would be down for a repeat of that, but we're gonna take one quick break here, and then we're gonna be back to talk about Kevin Love. So stay tuned for more Locked On Cavaliers. All right, and we're back with Jordan Zerm from UpRock, host of the Rebuild podcast. Jordan, we talked about culture. We talked about guys like Colin Sexton. We mentioned Kevin Love a bit. When you look at Kevin Love, who is kind of the leader of the team, he clearly made them better, did not play a lot. We didn't really hear from him at the end of the season because he didn't play in the last game, and the Cavs, much to my chagrin, did not do any exit interviews. So, like, we haven't, like, heard from him. We've basically just, like, seen him, like, enjoying his best life in Thailand.
His best middle-aged or, like, young dad life. Like, he doesn't have any kids, but he looks like he does.
Yeah, and, like, I'm sure, like, he, like, was firing up HBO Go. Like, he's a big Thrones nerd. Like, I just, like, wonder. Like, he's just living his best life right now. Like, he just seemed very happy, like, in a way that I don't remember him, like, seeming from afar and not really knowing, like, obviously not knowing him very well, but he just seems sort of content. Maybe that's not even the right word, but when you think about Kevin Love, based on, you know, his contract, what you saw from him in the limited amount of time he did play this year, how do you envision him in what we're going to see from this Cavs team going forward? Because I find that this is a question that, like, could go a variety of different ways, and I feel like all of them feel very plausible.
Yeah, I've done it. It's crazy too, because, like, I've done such a 180 on Kevin Love. Like, I wrote something for UpRocks pretty early on in the season, like pre All-Star break, about, you know, what are the Cavs going to do with Kevin Love? Because at the time, and he had not really returned from his injury yet, it was like part of, you know, the extension for him and all the, you know, the big deal the Cavs made of it in the offseason. And then watching,
literally brought him to, like, to the queue and, like, had him hang out with dudes on their lunch break wearing construction hats.
Yeah, they made dudes making like $12 an hour sit and watch him sign a $140 million contract, however much it was.
Like, not great, not the best optics.
Not at all. But, like, I understand them wanting to make him, like, quickly rushing to make him the face of the he's an easy dude to put at the front of your franchise because he's a really, really good dude. He's good with the media. He's good with, you know, with everybody. He's a, you know, obviously a good looking guy. Like, it's a very easy guy to base your franchise around. But I felt like it was a mistake to give him that extension. And it sort of played into this idea that the Cavs front office had early on about we're going to make the playoffs, which I think was, was a mistake, and I think Kobe Altman admitted as much in his sort of end of the year press conference.
Do you believe that they actually believe that, though? Because I just don't know if I do. I don't know if that was, like, positing and, like, putting on a face, because I just don't know if I actually believe that. There's just, like, I think Kobe is very smart. I think, like, Mike Gansey is very smart. I don't buy that, like, they looked at that roster and they were like, yeah, this is, like, 100% a playoff team. I just don't know if I buy it.
No, I don't know if I buy it either, but I do think I think there were people, including Dan Gilbert, higher up in the front office that either thought that or wanted to push that message. And I think they pushed that all the way down through the coaching staff and through Kobe Altman. And it just was not a good public front to sort of put on. But regardless of that, I wrote in this piece, I was like, I think the Cavs are going just should do whatever they can to trade Kevin Love, like, at the deadline or afterwards, and see what they can get for him. Because when I look down the road, when the Cavs were going to be ready to compete again, which, you know, if you're going, like, best case scenario, then two, you know, not next season, but the season after, you would hope that they would be back in sort of playoff contention, not like Eastern Conference Finals, but just a team that was on a path where you can get an 8 or a 7 or a 6 seed and keep going from there. And that's sort of best case scenario. And I looked at Kevin, who, like, by that point was going to be like 33, 34, and a guy that's injured a lot and can be hard to count on to be on the court. And so that's sort of where I was with that. And then he came back and he just made such a huge difference for both Jetty Osman and Colin Sexton and just the Cavs in general, because of not only his ability to space the floor and his talent, but just his leadership and being a guy that's, you know, when he's playing, I'm sure is much more involved with the team. And it made such a huge difference and will continue to make a huge difference for a team that's going to be really, really young and going to be relying on, you know, whoever they take in the lottery. And then year two of Colin Sexton and Jetty Osman, a guy that's still developing. And it's just his value goes just really beyond even just his talent on the court. And I think that my eyes were sort of open to that in the second half of the year when he came back. So I think he's going to be around for a little while. Like, my guess would be that he's going to be here for the, maybe almost the remainder of this contract. And I think, cause I think the Cavs really do like want to keep him around this team. But Chris, I don't know. I think if they got an offer eventually that just blew them out of the water, I also think it just would be hard not to consider it seriously. But I do think that he is more valuable than I thought he was. And I, before he got on the court with the younger guys and really played, I think he brought just more value than I ever imagined he would.
100%. I agree with that. I think, you know, offensively, borderline-ish top 10 offense with him on the floor for the season, that's not nothing. When you look at the team and you look at sort of the roster construction, like, he helps make up for a lot of different weaknesses. I think the injuries are the biggest thing that we just can't really project that. But like, if he has another back injury, if he has more foot injuries, like if he hurts his hand again, like if he misses another huge chunk of the season like he did last year, like things become a problem there. And I think you wonder, like, if, you know, like there's like the discussion of like who has the worst contract in the league right now. And like, you know, I think like John Wall, like, unfortunately the kind of is that guy. Love's probably up there if he keeps getting hurt. Like, I don't think that's an unreasonable thing.
No, and you can't lose him for the amount of time. Like, he can't have another injury that's going to keep him out as long as it did this year.
If he has like a foot injury like he did last year and like misses a bunch of time, I don't care if they took Zion. I don't care if they take like whomever or what they do in the summer to like readjust the roster, because it feels like the roster has to change in some way. Whatever they do, like if Kevin Love misses, like, is like, all right, he's going to be out like an indeterminate amount of time, at least until 2020, like, tank. Just there's no yes. just embrace the tank again. And that, for like, that is not fun. I think there was a large toll took on that team last year that they just like were, it was like got to Larry Drew very clearly. Jetty would look miserable a lot. Like, that was not a fun time for anybody. But like, that will be the best path forward if Love gets hurt again. Now, I also like the draft. I don't quite know how much I feel is I don't know a ton about the draft guys and exactly how they're going to transition, because I just don't have like the time to like watch a ton of college basketball. The only guy, based on who we know about what he's going to be in the NBA, that I would become more interested in seeing what the Cavs could get for Love is if they get the number one pick and they take Zion. It just seems like if they get Zion, and considering Love's, you know, doesn't love playing the five, considering that Zion seems to be like an NBA four, that's where I become more interested in like seeing what Love's role might be. But I think otherwise, like, you look at Ja, you look at RJ, Jarrett Culver, whomever, I think he helps all those guys in the same way he will help Sexton, because he will not force them to be something they're not going to be ready to from day one. And none of those guys look to be the type of talent that, like, you reshape everything for.
Yeah, no, I agree with you 100%. I think outside of Zion, Kevin Love's value is similar to what it was this year, where, yeah, if you're looking at wing guys like Hunter and Culver, and if you're looking at a point guard like Ja and RJ, another wing guy, it's yeah, Kevin Love's value is still going to be there, and he's going to help, you know, because that's the thing too with even Ja, who I think I'm higher on than most, but like all of those guys outside of Zion are going to need to develop. Like, none of those guys, I don't think, are going to come in and you're just going to be like, go play your game 100% what you did in college. Like, RJ's got to work on his three-pointer. Jarrett Culver is not really a big playmaker. He's not super athletic. DeAndre Hunter, similar. You know, there's just like a lot of these guys are going to need to take time and develop their game at the NBA level. And outside of Zion, yeah, I'm with you there, where I think Kevin will still be able to kind of provide that value for them and continue to space the floor, which will help those guys too. But yeah, when it comes to Zion, that's going to be really fascinating, because they are, obviously Zion is not going to be, you know, taking, especially year one, I'm sure he's not going to be taking a ton of threes, and he probably isn't going to be shooting a high percentage on him if he does. But, you know, what I know Kevin can play outside a lot and does spend a lot of time outside, but you wonder too if Zion's best quality his first season is just going to be a guy that can, you know, pound through the paint and get to the basket whenever he wants. You also just wonder sort of like what that will do to kind of Kevin's game, and if he just sort of gets relegated to being a guy that feels like he has to stay around the three-point line all the time. And that's not exactly, you know, I think he still even likes to play inside out. He'd rather start getting the ball in the post than, you know, just be just hanging out around the three-point line like he did in year one and a half of David Blatt when they could not figure out what to do with him and he was miserable. So, yeah, I think that's a really interesting point.
I think whomever the next coach is, I want to see what they do with him in terms of actually running sets through him, because I just like didn't feel like that was done quite enough with him. And I'm not saying like you need to go back to Minnesota Kevin Love, where like he's taking a ton of touches at the elbow, but like more of that I think would be good. I don't think that's like an unreasonable thing, and I also think you look at the roster. I just don't really quite know like what the roster defensively is going to look like. Love is like not a good defender.
No,
like
it's never been his
never been
suit.
Good. But even like when you watch him this year, like you could tell he just wasn't like trying all the time. And I get it. Like, I firmly get it. It's like Devin Booker. It's like, why is Devin Booker incentivized to try really hard on defense when he plays for the freaking Phoenix Suns? Like, that's like a thing. That's a thing we know happens in the NBA. They're not going to, like, necessarily add, like, a quote-unquote good defender in the draft right away. Sexton was obviously very bad on defense last year. I wonder if, like, the Cavs, like, best way for considering their roster and considering what Love is good at and how much he could help them unlock a good offense is, like, whomever they pick and just, like, lean into the offense and maybe get a guy with defensive potential. So maybe that's Culver, maybe that's Hunter, maybe that's Barrett. You're hot. I want you to kind of talk about Ja, because I know you like him and his possible fit in the Cavs much more than I do. I'm, like, out on it. But I wonder if their best way to move forward is to, like, lean into Kevin Love and, like, get him just kind of rolling the offense and then try to hope, like, guys like Jetty, guys like Colin, bring back David Nwaba, guys like Nance can kind of make the defense passable in a way that's, like, it's maybe not good this year, but it takes a step forward so, like, in a year or 2 years, it's more put together. And it's worth noting that some of the guys that they are talking to, in particular Jensen, who works a lot with Rudy Gobert, and David Vanderpool, do a lot of work in terms of designing defenses. Utah does not have like the quote-unquote defensive assistance, but like if you're involved with Rudy Gobert and developing Rudy Gobert, that means like you're understanding the complexities of NBA defense.
Yeah, and we just saw Utah go to an incredible extreme to try and guard the Houston Rockets, and it took them 3 games like to get used to it, but they actually did some pretty decent work with that scheme against Houston and really were sort of able to they made it a point to sort of take away the lob and force Harden into sort of floaters and force him to his right, and so they did a lot of scheming and they did stuff that was pretty extreme for a team that didn't play that way all season, but they were able to sort of adapt with that. So yeah, I think the defensive mindset has to be there, because part of it I think is, yeah, like the Cavs have bad defenders, but they also have I have no idea what Larry Drew's staff, was doing in terms of teaching defense. And obviously Ty Lue never could get the Cavs to really play great defense until it was spurts in the playoffs. But I think with Ja Morant, it's I think why I like him so much and feel like I would seriously consider him at two or three or wherever the Cavs end up picking is because I just think like he's such an elite passer, and I know he has a high turnover rate, but I put a lot of that on him being, on Murray State and feeling like, well, not only having the ball in his hands all the time, but feeling like he had to make every play, and hopefully he can cut those down a little bit once he gets to the NBA. But I think his vision is so special. Like, it's not just good, it's just like unbelievably good. And like, I understand the defensive concerns. I understand like him and Colin Sexton as your sort of front line trying to stay in front of guys around the perimeter is going to be bad, especially early on. And I know he's slight of frame and probably will always be, but like, I know he's not a great 3-point shooter yet, but I think his form is fine, and I think he's going to turn into a good 3-point shooter. And I think his vision is incredible, to the point where like it's a quality that I think you just take a guy like that, because it's not something that you see, you teach and you see all that often. And then I do, the Colin Sexton thing, like taking him off the ball and moving him sort of to the two is, I don't know if it's ideal, but I don't know if Sexton is ever going to be a guy. Obviously, he had one of the lowest sort of assist rates for a point guard in quite some time. Like, he just was not a guy that was really ever looking to pass. I think he got better as the year went on, but he still was a guy. Chris, you and I, sitting together at games, would just talk about, him putting his head down and driving.
He's not a good passer.
He's not a good passer. So that sort of worries me, and that doesn't seem like something that's going to change that significantly. And like, if Colin Sexton is just not going to be a playmaker in terms of like getting other guys involved and is just going to be sort of a high volume scoring guy, I don't think it's the worst thing in the world to pair him with somebody that is going to get other guys involved and is going to be somebody that can get his own bucket, but is also going to make things easier for other guys. So I guess that's why I'm higher on Ja Morant. Like, I understand all the concerns and I understand why you would take RJ Barrett over him, or even you would take a Culver or another wing over him. And I wouldn't be mad if they do. I understand that reasoning. But I do think that, like, I haven't seen somebody with sort of his vision at the college level, just in terms of passing the ball, in a while. And I think that's the sort of like elite talent that makes it hard to pass up on him if he's there. So I guess that's why I'm higher on him than I think I've seen most people that kind of cover and follow the Cavs are.
So I think if you take him, you're going all in, I think, sort of what we've talked about with, like, just leaning in on what makes Love useful. We'll probably, hopefully, if you think his contract ages well, like, it will continue to kind of make him useful, and that's the defensive stuff. And it, you know, it is a contract that does de-escalate as it goes down, so, like, that makes it a little bit, I think, a bit more tolerable once you get through 2020, 2021, and the next season after that. Wrapping up on this question, when you look, Jordan, at the guys that he could be sharing the front court with, I think that's the area of the team that's going to have some shuffling. You have Thompson, you have John Henson, you have Ante Zizic and Larry Nance all under contract. Marquise Chris, in theory, could come back. You could throw Nawaba in there as a four as well. Of the guys that could be on the team next year, whom do you like as actual fits? If Love is back and is going to be a feature part of the team next year, and assuming he's healthy and all that, who do you actually like as a fit with him as we look ahead?
Yeah, I mean, I think we've seen, it is still a small sample size, but I do think that, like, Larry Nance Jr. and Kevin Love have put up some decent numbers together on the court. And I think it's kind of, you know, a lot of us, I remember, you know, in last year's playoffs after the Cavs made the trade for Larry Nance, and then Ty Lue was playing Tristan Thompson and Larry Nance Jr. together a lot. And it just was like two guys with, you know, similar sort of skill sets in what they're doing and just clogging up the paint, and not guys that are, you know, neither one of them was really shooting. Larry Nance wasn't shooting any threes yet. And it just didn't, the numbers offensively with them on the court were just bad. And I do think that, that Larry Nance can play, alongside Kevin. And I do think that that fit is a decent one. And I don't know with Ante Zizic, like, I have no idea. We mentioned this on an earlier podcast. It was great to see the Cavs and get him playing time and develop him more. But I have no idea if he's a regular rotation player when this team gets, you know, competitive again, and what it's going to look like next year. And I don't know how many minutes he ever even really played with Kevin Love out there on the floor. But I guess Larry Nance is probably the one that intrigues me the most with Kevin. And I do think, like, Larry, there's still another level that Larry can kind of take his game to. And even if he's not a guy that's going to shoot, you know, even like 37, 36% from three, even if he's in the mid-30s, I think that's a big deal for him to be able to sort of extend his game out a little bit out there and take a couple per game like he kind of started doing. And I think his passing is super underrated. And I think Kevin's passing is underrated as well. And so I think when you have those two guys out there on the floor too, again, just, you know, this team needs guys that can open things up for other players and make it easier for other players, because you're just not getting that from guys, Jordan Clarkson, from Colin Sexton, from any of those guys on the perimeter. Jordan. Like, you're just really not. So you have to get it from other people. And I think that fit to me, both, like, just because they have sort of varying skill sets and because they're both good with the ball on their hands. Like, they can pass out of a double team. They can, you know, pass to a guy cutting through the lane. Like, I think that intrigues me the most.
If the Cavs want to do something that is against the grain, I think, like, leaning into the passing of Love and Nance would be a really interesting thing to try to do. Build an offense around, like, Kevin Love's passing would, like, make life easier for Sexton. It would make life easier for whomever they take in the draft. And I think next year will, like, be a really key year for Larry Nance, because, like, even though him and Love have been on the same team for a year and a half, we don't have a ton of data, like, or tape that tells us, like, how they're going to play together, for one. And number two, I mean, it's something you said. And number two, like, we're going to find out next year, like, if any of the stuff he flashed this year is for real. Like, is the shooting for real? Is the passing for real? Is, like, his ability to dribble up the floor and initiate fast breaks for real. That's all going to kind of matter next year. And if him and Love play together and be good, like that would be a good thing.
No, I think you're right. I think it is a really big year for Larry, because I think a lot of, ever since the Cavs got him, was sort of just like talking about potential, talking about what he can become. And then even, you know, in training camp and during like media day this year, a lot of the questions to Larry, you know, he gave some quotes about like, oh, I really feel like I can open up my game this season. I really feel like I can do a bunch of different things. And like he did try and open up his game, but it wasn't at a level where like you would believe he can consistently do it. So I think you're spot on with that. I think this is going to be a really big year for Larry, just to see like, okay, can you become this player that is sort of the next level of what you are right now, or are you just sort of going to be this guy who's an above average basketball player, but that's kind of it?
Actually, we'll wrap it up one last question. Yes or no? I don't want like a detailed analysis of this. Just what does your gut tell you when I ask you this? Does having Kevin Love on the roster make this a more appealing job for whomever they hire? Like, if you're Alex Jensen, David Vanderpool, does like knowing that you get to coach Kevin Love compared to some of the other openings make this job more attractive in your mind?
I'd say yes. I'd say a slight yes. I don't know. A slight yes is what I'll go with.
Yeah, I'd be super queasy about the injuries, but if I felt like he was going to be healthy, I would feel good about that. I think, like, you know, depending on what they do, like, I think that will be an interesting question. I don't know if like that information is going to get leaked in any way, or like if that will be addressed in any way, but I just think like that, and like comparing the Grizzlies, the Suns, and the Cavs job is just sort of like an interesting thing when you think about those three scenarios. And like, would you want to coach Devin Booker? Do you want to coach Jaren Jackson? Like, do you want to coach Kevin Love? I think these are like interesting sort of micro questions, because they're all interviewing the same candidates.
Yeah, it is. I would be terrified to coach in Phoenix, because even though...
Are you going to get, like, you would get goat shit in your office.
Yeah, and like, yeah, that's going to be that. And then even though, you know, they're like, all right, James Jones is officially our general manager. Like, there is just that you talk about culture, like that place has just been a black hole for, it's like, it's been them and the Sacramento Kings. Those two organizations have just been like, have had no idea what they've been doing. So I would be terrified to coach in Phoenix, despite Devin Booker and DeAndre Ayton.
There is like an argument, and it's like crazy how far we've come with this, that like among the three like bad teams that have openings right now, so the Cavs, the Grizzlies, and the Suns, that like a Dan Gilbert owned team is like the best culture to join right now. There's an argument to be made. Like, it's clearly like better than Phoenix, and it's like you look at Robert Parra in Memphis, like you don't get great vibes coming out of there either, considering like how Chris Wallace and JB Bickerstaff found out that they weren't gonna have jobs anymore.
Yep. No, it's a pretty wild thing to think about, that the word stability is not thrown out a lot when you're talking about Dan Gilbert. But I've been impressed by, like, Kobe Altman has impressed me, and I think how this team sort of dug themselves out of the muck, and obviously the man we talked about on this podcast today had a lot to do with that. But I do think that, like, Kobe Altman and his staff sort of deserve some credit for just like not letting it completely fall apart and completely go the way it went the first time that LeBron left. So I do think that there is something to be said for, you know, how they looked like a competent basketball team towards the end of the season, and how they were sort of able to get, you know, even a little bit of buzz around Colin Sexton and some other guys. So compared to some of the other situations, yeah, man, it's not as dire as some of those.
Yeah, and they really tried. I don't know if you got those emails, but they like really tried to make the Colin Sexton first team
they did
happen. Like, I get it, but nah,
not this year.
maybe with whomever they take this year. But you can find Jordan on Twitter at Cleveserm. Be sure to check out the Rebuild podcast and read his writing at a bunch of different places. Jordan, as always, man, thanks so much.
Chris, it was fun, man. Thank you.